To order. Will the members please show their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please take the final roll.
31 members present.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Guy and Munson are excused from the call today.
The prayer today is by Father Rudy Brunig of the Cathedral of the Nativity. Will members please rise for today's prayer?
God, our Father, creator of all, giver of life, we thank you for having brought us to the beginning of another day. We ask today your blessing on this assembly and the prayer of the psalmist. O Lord, you have been our refuge through all generations. Before the mountains were begotten and the earth and the world were brought forth, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. 70 is the sum of our years, or 80 if we are strong, and most of them are fruitless toil, for they pass quickly, and we drift away. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain wisdom of heart. And may the gracious care of the Lord our God be ours. Prosper the work of our hands for us. Prosper the work of our hands. Amen.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, move that we have the prayer spread across the journal, please.
There's no objection. The prayer will be spread in the journal. Will the Chief Clerk please certify as the correctness of the previous day's journal?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 107th day and House Supplement number 57.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 107th day and House Supplement number 57 be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
There's no objection. The journal and journal supplement will stand approved. The guest for introduction to the House this morning, Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, you and I have some constituents in Gallery A this morning. I would like to introduce them, ask them to stand. There's four of them, and ask you to hold your applause so we give all the names. They're in Juneau attending the State League of Women Voters Council. Aileen Barrett, Connie Griffith, Jean Sandy, and Jane Hanchett.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also attending League of Women Voters Council meeting from Fairbanks is Kathy Kirby in Gallery A.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, we have some additional very special people in the gallery today, and I think they're all in Gallery B. I'll call their names and ask the members to hold their applause until we've recognized all of them. They're members of the National Retired Teachers Association and the American Association of Retired Persons. And with us today are J. Leonard Johnson, who is National President of the American Association of Retired Persons. He's from Washington, D.C. We have Lyman Woodman, State Director of the American Association of Retired Persons, from Douglas. Jane Gustafson, State Director of the National Retired Teachers Association from Juneau, and members of the Alaska Joint State Legislative Committee of the American Association of Retired Persons and the National Retired Teachers Association. They include Florence Barnhart, Chairman from Douglas, William Cashin, Vice Chairman from Fairbanks, John Poling, Secretary from Nome, Mary Carl from Anchorage, Junior Love from Ketchikan, Stanley Herman from Soldotna, and Rose Lawson from Fairbanks.
Representative Parker.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A is a friend of mine, and Mr. Burns from our district, who's down here for the League's State Council meeting, Betsy Canego.
Representative Buckle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, a constituent of mine and Mr. McKinnon, Mary Price.
Representative Osterbeck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, I got a constituent, and her son, Katie Isaacson, and Chris, her son, Chris.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've got two villages represented today in galleries A and B, and I'd like to have them stand as I call off their names. The village of Kaliganik, we've got Gusty Turiung, Warren Kasayuli, Lisa Johnson, Elena McCarr, Mary Jane Nelson, Bertha Nelson, Bobby Petla, George Nelson, and their chaperones, Meg and John Jorgensen, and George Nelson is down here with as chaperone as well. In Gallery B, Mr. Speaker, the village of New Stuyarap, as you notice, they know who they are and who they belong to, and they have separated themselves, and I guess that way we know that we have separate identities, and no one is ever going to make us forget that, and I really like it. The village of New Stuyarap, we got Peter Akuak, Bob Chuknak, Christine Kivak, Simeon Christopher, Annie Chunak, Vera Gust, Vera Nikita, Masa Wairan, Moxie Oyaluk, Sam Hansen, Wassily Wanhola, and their chaperones are Jerry and Aideen Arthur.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I understand that we also have in the gallery Ms. Jean Stassel, who is the president of the League of Women Voters for the state.
Further guests for introduction this morning. Messages from the governor.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senator Bennett to the Governor's Blue Ribbon Commission to find alternatives to impasse in certified staff school board negotiations. The Senate adopted the Free Conference Committee report on committee substitute for House Bill No. 3 and Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill No. 3. Thus, Free Conference Committee substitute for House Bill 3 relating to elections and election campaign contributions, revising the Alaska Election Code and providing for an effective date passed the Senate. The House failed that Free Conference Committee report yesterday. The Senate has, excuse me.
At this time, I'd like to appoint a second Free Conference Committee to meet with the like committee of the Senate on House Bill 3. Representative Gardner, Chairman, Representative Anderson, and Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution No. 43, endorsing the concept and requesting implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978. This resolution has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill No. 746 relating to overtime compensation under a flexible work hour plan with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 746, same title. And it is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed the following, and it is transmitted for consideration. Senate Bill No. 519 by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to the use of limited entry permits as collateral for loans.
Resources.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Finance had committee substitute for Senate Bill 140, extending the authority of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation in making rural loans under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 140 and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, signing Dupass, Freeman, Schaefer, Guy, Haugen, and Rogers, having no recommendations, Smith and McKinnon. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 140 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 222, appropriating from the General Fund to the Department of Education and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for school construction and for public school transportation and transferring certain general fund appropriations for schools and school construction under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 222 and reports it back with individual recommendations and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, signing Dupass, Freeman, Schaefer, Guy, and Haugen. No recommendation, Rogers, Smith, and McKinnon. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 222 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 45 relating to the senior citizen tax exemption under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Moss, Smith, Rogers, Haugen, Guy, and Schaefer. McKinnon has no recommendation. Sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution number 45 has no further referral. The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 556 appropriating for the operating and capital expenses of the state government under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 556 and recommends it do pass with attached amendments and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, signing do pass as amended. Cotton, Haugen, Phillips, Parr, and signing do pass without amendment, Brown, Anderson signed do pass without amendment, Miller signed do not pass as amended. House Bill 556 appears on today's calendar.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Eliason.
Would you have the clerk please read that committee report again?
Clerk, please read the committee report again.
The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 556 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 556 and recommends it do pass with attached amendments. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, signing do pass as amended. Cotton, Haugen, Phillips, Parr, signing do pass without amendment, Brown, and Anderson, signing do not pass as amended, Miller.
Mr. Speaker,
Representative Eliason.
Is Representative Haugen a member of the Rules Committee?
House, please stand at ease.
Oh, excuse me, it's Haight.
Come back to order. Clerk, please read the report one more time.
The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 556 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 556 and recommends it do pass with attached amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, signing do pass as amended. Cotton, Hayes, Phillips, Parr, signing do pass without amendment, Brown, and Anderson, signing do not pass as amended, Miller. The Committee on Resources has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 630 relating to the taking and sale of fish without an entry permit or interim use permit under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 630 and reports it back with individual recommendations and fiscal notes. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, signing do pass, Fuller, signing do not pass, Eliason and Osterbach, signing no recommendation, Chatterton, Carney, Jaroff, and Miles. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 630 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 835 relating to non-resident big game tag fees under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 835 Finance and reports it back with individual recommendations and a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, signing do pass, Freeman, Schaefer, and Haugen, signing no recommendation, Guy, Rogers, Smith, and McKinnon. House Bill 835 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 969 relating to salmon fisheries enhancement under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 969 Finance and reports it back without recommendation and attaches fiscal notes. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, signing no recommendation, Guy, Duncan, Montgomery, and Haugen, signing do pass, Freeman, and Schaefer. House Bill 969 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The Free Conference Committee, which has had Senate Bill number 88 relating to truant children and House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 88 Rules Amended House relating to truant children and school closing effective date under consideration recommends that free conference committee substitute for Senate Bill number 88 relating to truant children effective date be adopted. The report was signed by the Senate members Meehlin, Ziegler, and Hackney. By the House members, Cotton Chairman, Munson signed no recommendation, Eliason do pass. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Albro Gregory by Representatives Fuller and Schaefer and Senator Ferguson. House Concurrent Resolution number 69 by the Resources Committee, requesting the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission to investigate the possibility of creating a separate administrative area for the Aleutian Islands and requesting the Department of Fish and Game to provide the legislature with data and statistics relating to salmon harvests in the Aleutian Islands.
Resources.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Freeman. House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come to order? Will the House please come to order? Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 556 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act appropriating for the operating and capital expenses of the state government and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 556 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 556 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman, concurred in by Meekins, Freeman, Schaefer, Guy, Duncan, McKinnon, Smith, and Rogers. Montgomery signed. Do pass if amended. Haugen has no recommendation. The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 556 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 556 and recommends it do pass with attached amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, signing do pass as amended. Cotton, Hayes, Phillips, and Parr. Signing do pass without amendment, Brown and Anderson. Signing do not pass as amended, Miller. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
May we have a brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 556 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There's no objection. The Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 556 will be... There is objection. There is objection to the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute.
Brief
Representative Hayes. House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order?
Mr. Speaker, I move my objection.
Is there further objection to the motion to adopt the Finance Committee substitute? There's no further objection. Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Are there amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read the First Amendment.
Amendment number 1 by the Rules Committee to page 44, line 23. This has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. It's with the packet.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the Rules Committee amendment.
Objection.
There is objection, Representative Cotton.
Just for discussion purposes, the Rules Committee met on House Bill 556, which is the budget, and we considered adopting a Rules Committee substitute for the bill, but this would have required a printing that would have taken a day or two. So instead, we decided to adopt a Rules Committee amendment. In either case, it would require the same vote of the body. It would have required a majority vote to adopt the Rules Committee substitute, and it will require a majority vote to
adopt the Rules Committee amendment. The Rules Committee is a committee of referral of the, on the bill, so we don't feel like we're breaking the budget open on the floor. As the Finance Committee amended the original bill, with their committee substitute, the Rules Committee amended the original bill with the amendment that has been attached and it's on the desk. The amendment adds $750,000 to the Capital Site Planning Commission. The Capital Site Planning Commission appears in the short form each year, but it has been funded at zero. This year we felt it was necessary to fund it because of a couple of conflicting laws that we have on the books. One of them says the capital is supposed to move, and the other one says that people have to approve the money. That a commission created by the legislature puts forth in a bond issue. Well, that's been tried once. One commission put forth one amount that was turned down by the people. Both laws still exist, so we want the commission to come up with another figure and attempt once again to offer a plan for a new capital site that the people can have a chance to vote on.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I object to the adoption of the amendment, not necessarily because of the substance of the amendment, but the principle involved. Under normal circumstances, which anything that has to do with a capital move is never normal, but under normal circumstances, the finance chairman would be the proper person to stand up from the committee and object to this. I understand his reluctance to do that, and I sympathize with it. But the Finance Committee has spent many, many days, weeks, months, hours working on this budget. It was gone over very carefully at subcommittees, night meetings, morning meetings. And as a matter of principle, I don't think that it's the best interest of this body now or ever to allow a budget to be busted on the floor. As far as I'm concerned, there's no difference in an amendment to the capital budget, to the operating budget, offered on the floor by the chairman of the Rules Committee than any other member of this body. Again, I'm not going to argue about the substance of the amendment, but the proper place for that amendment, if it was to be proposed and be adopted, was to have been in the Finance Committee. And I know there are many members on this floor that have a number of items that they would be only too happy to add to this budget on this floor if we permit that to happen. Again, as a matter of principle, I don't care how you look at it, who's behind it, what it's for, anything else. When you bring an operating budget down here and allow it to start amending and rewriting it on the floor of the House, you're making a big mistake. You're negating the work and the effort that was put into it in the Finance Committee.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, just a slight correction. This amendment isn't by Cotton, it's by the Rules Committee. The committee met on the bill, adopted the amendment, and we're offering it on the floor, as I earlier explained.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I was really glad to hear that the representative from Ketchikan wasn't talking about the substance. I hope that if we had a separate bill sometime dealing with the capital move, we can count on his yes vote.
Representative Miller.
Very briefly, please, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order?
Mike? Take a look at what I'll comment at ease in a while.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the member from Ketchikan who spoke about the budget and and it being an inviolate document in terms of amendment. Is he saying that the budget is inviolate, or that any bill coming out of the Finance Committee, is he saying that's an inviolate bill and we don't amend it on the floor? What is his point? If that's his point, I'd like to get that on record, because perhaps we ought to look at that from the standpoint of some of the other committees which is the last committee of reference prior to going to rules. Perhaps what he's saying is that maybe we shouldn't amend any bill on this floor.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Hayes knows that that's not the case. He knows it as well as anybody else does here. There's no bill that goes through this body that has more opportunity for scrutiny, investigation, recommendations, proposed amendments, or whatever else you want to talk about before it comes to the floor of the House. None. There are two members of the minority that serve on the Finance Committee. The staff are available and have been available to go to the individual caucuses when the bill was finished, explain it line by line, word by word, if that is the case. I don't know whether they did that in Mr. Hayes' caucus, but they certainly did in the majority caucus. The members of the subcommittee, along with the appropriate staff, the analysts were there all day long going over the budget before it ever came here for a vote. There were recommendations. There were amendments proposed. Each and every one was considered. Some of them were adopted, some were not. And I think it's a mistake, I said it before, it's a mistake to treat the operating budget and consider it just another bill, because it's not just another bill. It's better than $1 billion. And there's no bill, again, I repeat, there's no bill that goes through this body that receives as much attention and as much scrutiny as this one does. Every opportunity has been afforded to every member of this House to have input into this budget. And from a practical standpoint, and if you want to check around with some of your neighbors, there's a number of them in here that have a group of amendments in their pocket that they would be only too delighted to offer at this particular time. I'm not saying that the bill is inviolate. I'm just saying that there's a lot of work and effort's gone into it, and a balanced consideration and judgment made that this was a proper way to go. And I object, in principle I object, to coming down here on the floor and start rewriting a budget that's $1.5 billion. That isn't good statesmanship, good business, or even good sense.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, if I may just follow up on that. Representative Hayes and, of course, other members are very much aware that when appropriation bills come to the floor that have gone through Finance Committee, that we never accept amendments to those appropriation bills, because once you open it up, and no matter what the size of the appropriation is, once you open it up, it begins to grow, because everybody does have other items they want on, and if we accept one amendment, everyone is fair game. And I've heard time after time, and I'm not criticizing the finance chairman on this case because I understand where he comes from, I've heard him time after time on the floor of this House this year stand up and say this amendment was considered in committee or it was not considered in committee, but whatever the case might be, you don't break the bill on the floor of the House, and this is the same case. In fact, this is a much better example of not breaking a bill. This is the major bill going through this body, with the exception of House Bill 60. Well, it's a major piece of legislation. You know, we've got $1.2 billion tied up here. We're talking about breaking the budget on this amendment, and I have a stack of amendments that I didn't propose in committee that I'm willing to propose here on the floor today. Very good proposals that won't benefit my community, but will benefit on a statewide basis. If we're going to break that budget, let's do it right. let's give everybody a chance to really bring out some of the items that they didn't bring up in committee because they knew that we were working against limits, because they knew we only had a certain amount of money to appropriate, because they knew that we had other priorities. This is a real, you know, no matter what the rules chairman says about being a rules committee amendment, we all know where it came from. And I've sat with Mr. Cotton for 6 years on this floor, and I know every move the fellow plans. And this one has been coming. It's a Cotton amendment. It's not a rules committee amendment, no matter how he disguises it. It's a typical case of breaking the budget. The amendment that he's proposing was considered in Finance Committee and voted down. Other amendments that are considered in that committee and voted down are not brought back on the floor and inserted in the bill. And I'm not warning anyone. I'm just saying I've got a number of amendments that a lot of people would like to have, and I will be submitting those in the very near future.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure what kind of a motto the previous speaker has above his desk, but I do know that the speaker from Ketchikan has a motto that says that things are never politically right if they're morally wrong. And I think in this particular situation, we're talking about something that's as well as political, also moral. We have two laws that are passed by the people of the state of Alaska pertaining to the move of the Capitol, and I think that when a representative from Juneau talks about the fact that this is important legislation, I'd like to submit to him that this particular amendment is even more important legislation than the operating budget. The people of Alaska have mandated that we do something about moving the Capitol, and currently they have expressed a desire to see a bondable figure on the ballot that they can vote on as soon as possible. I'd like to see that happen in the fall. I don't think that this amendment is a Cotton amendment. I think there are more than one person involved in this body who are interested in seeing this amendment passed. And I think that when we push the buttons, we'll find out whether or not we have the power to pass this amendment. I think that the representative from Ketchikan should read his own plaque above his desk and see where he really stands.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to add a little to this thing in regards to the respected member from the Juneau area. I don't believe this was just an amendment by a member within my district who's also the chairman of the Rules Committee. I've been working with Representative Cotton with this amendment. I know as well as Representative Hayes the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I don't view this as a Cotton amendment. I view this as an amendment worked on, at least by myself, Hayes, and Cotton.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to talk a little bit about this amendment and this budget. I really like the amendment. And because I like the amendment so much, it makes the budget much more palatable for me to vote for. So once I get to vote for this amendment, I'll be able to vote for this whole budget. And that makes me feel really good. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, this is my chance. Mr. Speaker, there are several members were talking about principle and behavior on the floor and protocol and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, every good legislator in his or her career has got to employ tactics. No matter which way you sit on an issue, you got to do the very best you can for your constituency. And I think someone said that we saw this coming, and I do wish to commend the representative from Eagle River, Representative Cotton, for the very gracious way that he's comporting himself on this issue. I think that he's handling it in a very civilized manner, a manner which we all understand. But I just wanted to make one other final comment and observation in the arena of politics that I love so much, is that every good legislator must at some point in time in their career rise above principle. And this, I think, is a comment.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to say that I agree very much with Representative Freeman and Representative Duncan that the budget shouldn't be broken on the floor. And I already stated that I didn't think that was what was happening here. Again, we could have adopted a Rules Committee substitute, and that would have just required a different form of vote, but it would have required the same vote. And Jim says that he's got several amendments for the Anchorage area. Well, I've been trying to slip in a few over there, so maybe we'll, although I won't vote for any other amendments that are offered spuriously or in any other way from the floor, I think that the Rules Committee amendment is just what it says it is, and that it's not a floor amendment in that regard. And I agree with Mr. Freeman and Mr. Duncan that we shouldn't accept amendments from the floor, and I intend to vote against any other amendments that's offered on the floor.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, we can talk about the fine points, whether this is busting the budget or not. The fact is that at least in the 10 years that I've been here, never has this body voted on a budget that hadn't passed through finance in its entirety. Never, not once. I can recall about the 8th legislature, for reasons that escape me, the budget was pulled back, but it didn't go back to rules. It went back where it should have gone. It went back to finance. And let's don't kid ourselves. We're establishing a new, and I think very dangerous, and I think not too credible precedent if we start voting on the budget for items that did not clear muster in a bipartisan finance committee. As has been pointed out before, all of this went to caucus. It went through the committee process. I don't think there was ever a meeting on this budget that wasn't announced on the floor of this House. And this will be the first time in at least 10 years, and I suspect it'll be the first time since statehood, that this body has ever voted for a budget containing an amendment that did not first clear the finance process. And if I were a member of the Finance Committee or the Finance Chairman, I would be trying to figure out what I'm going to say the next time somebody proposes, and it might even be another committee. Hey, maybe I, as Chairman of State Affairs Committee, will have something that maybe couldn't quite pass muster on the floor of the, or in the committee room upstairs on finance. So I'll just get my friendly State Affairs Committee members together and we'll propose a State Affairs Committee amendment. And we'll say, oh, this isn't really busting the budget because it's a committee. Of course, Mr. Cotton will probably say, well, that's different because that was one of the committees of referral. But I think the difference has become so thin at this point that they become just non-existent. If I were chairman or vice chairman or a member of finance, I would be very, very apprehensive about the adoption of an amendment like this.
Representative Brown? Representative Parr?
Mr. Speaker, we've all talked about whether this amendment's a good idea or not, and about busting the budget and all those good things, and nobody's really addressed the key issue, and you may well get down to it. Mr. Speaker, the people of the state voted to move the Capitol, and it is my view that the legislature thwarted the will of the people when we passed that, let's call it a monstrosity, which required that the plan for a city of 30,000 people. I think that's a fair statement of the case, at least as I see it. I don't blame those members who come from Southeastern, for example, who oppose the Capitol move, or their constituents want them to oppose it, and I don't blame them a bit. That's understandable. But there was a statewide vote, and it did say move the Capitol. And the reason the Capitol has not been moved is because we have had an unrealistic 30,000 population figure to plan for. We all know that. I think everybody in the state who's followed this issue at all knows it. And everybody realizes that this is not simply a matter of an amendment to a sacrosanct budget. This is an amendment which would have that Capitol Planning Commission go back to work and come in with a lower figure, not for 30,000 people, but for a reasonable figure, which could then be again offered to the voters to give them a chance to approve it. And I think that's what the real issue is, and that's what we really ought to be talking about, and not about a sacrosanct budget.
Representative Duncan.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think there's a lot of people here caught on the horns of a dilemma. There's a lot of individuals, I'm sure, that concur with Representative Freeman and others who have said you should not break the budget on the floor, that amendments and everything else should be discussed in committee, any proposed changes. Representative Miller mentioned that. I, for one, and I'm sure there are others, don't want to be part of the first legislature that busted the budget on the floor, and don't want to be part in seeing this thing grow and grow out of proportion. So, Mr. Speaker, even though there's been that opportunity in Finance Committee before, and I think there should be, if there's amendments to be considered this budget, they should be considered in committee. They should be debated and discussed and voted on in committee. We should continue to work through the committee system that's been set up in this House and in the other body. If there's an amendment that a member of this body feels needs to be addressed, I would suggest we do that in committee. Mr. Speaker, I'd move that we return the committee substitute or return House Bill 556 to Finance Committee.
There is a motion to return committee substitute for House Bill 556 back to the Finance Committee. Is there a debate on the motion? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
14 yeas, 25 nays.
Motion has failed. Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a comment or an observation. It seems, Mr. Speaker, that many members of your party are having problems with the motion and the, and what they're alluding to as a maneuver that is presently occurring on this floor, and they're talking about such things as budget busting, poor precedent, and that sort of thing. I think really what we're talking about is something that we in the minority have been dealing with for a number of years, and that's what you call majority rule. And if the I think you probably noticed that there haven't been any members of my caucus who've really been offended by what's going on today, even though they're not entirely in favor of the amendment. And I would like to add that, in a way of assurance, that if the November election goes the way many of us expect to, that by this time next year, those people that are having trouble with this protocol, so to speak, won't have any trouble at all.
Is there further debate? Representative Miller?
Very brief, please, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. There is an amendment to the amendment. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment to amendment number one by Anderson and Brown. After line five, after submitted, add, including inflation and based on the present population of the capital with its projected growth by the scheduled time of completion of the new capital.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Wait a minute. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment to the amendment be adopted.
There is objection. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, more carefully, the amendment actually does read that it's part of an amendment to the intent language to accompany the current amendment. And what it would do is make sure that the estimate is a realistic one that takes into account inflation, which is very real at the present time. Nobody can say that it's not just because they have a different position on the amendment. And the other thing is it takes into account the present population of capital and projected growth. And I think that that gives a much more realistic estimate of the circumstances that any new capital would be in, rather than some of the current situations. I think they're stuck with some kind of a 30,000 population figure or something like that. And I think this is much more realistic.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to point out to the members that the original initiative, 1974 initiative, specifically stated that the move should not be accomplished in such a way as to unduly impact the economy of Juneau. And so the size of the move would necessarily have to comply with that requirement.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, so we have our facts straight. What is the present population of the capital?
I think it's about 22,000, actually.
Mr. Speaker, then could we have a guess from one of the sponsors of the amendment as to what that projected growth would be by the scheduled date of completion of the new capital from 22,000 up to what, please?
Representative Anderson.
Using SQUAG, I don't know if anybody knows what that is. It's a scientifically calculated wild blank guess. Mr. Speaker, my estimate of the population of Juneau by the time this thing finally gets around to getting done will be approximately 35,000 or 40.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, are we saying that what I said a while ago about the 30,000 population figure being a means of thwarting the will of the voters is now going to be 35,000 to thwart the will of the voters?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, boy, I'll tell you, I don't know how to respond to that. My feelings are really hurt. I even find it hard to say. Never has it been my intent to do anything like that, because the people's will is our will. So,
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I think that Mr. Anderson and Mr. Brown are capitalizing on a, no pun intended there, on an idea that was successful a few years back, and that was when the legislature required the commission to plan for a large city. And that was one of the reasons that that I think that the plans that were presented to the legislature and to the people weren't accepted, because the city was too large. Now, they're trying it again. I don't blame them. It worked once, but I'm against the amendment. I hope it doesn't work again.
Is there further debate? The question before the House is the amendment to amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Representative Hayes. Must be that. Clerk, please take final roll.
15 yeas, 24 nays.
The amendment to amendment number one has failed. Representative Hayes, it may be a problem with that chair. It's been known to do strange things. Representative Miles.
Can we revert to introduction of guests, please? Mr.
Under introduction of guests.
In Gallery B, some familiar faces to most of us, Jim and Martha Rutter. Jack and Martha. Very familiar face, but the name is and a constituent of mine in Gallery A, Bonnie Jack.
Representative Duncan.
May we have it at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. The clerk, please read the next amendment to the amendment, number one.
Amendment to intent for amendment number one by Mr. Anderson. After submitted, add individual Excuse me, I can't read it. Individual.
Including inflation.
Including inflation. Excuse me.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment to the amendment be adopted.
Objection. There is an objection. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I just for the life of me can't imagine why anyone would vote against this amendment. It's no fair to be physical on the floor of the House. But anyway, Mr. Speaker, really seriously, as you well know, inflation is a problem of every person in the entire United States. And I would ask that members adopt this amendment.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Isn't there something in the new criminal code about assault in the chambers of parliamentary bodies?
Question. Representative Miller.
Fortunately, Mr. Speaker, I'm sitting two away from the assaultor, although Mr. Byrne may take that prerogative. Mr. Speaker, the previous speaker, Mr. Anderson, mentioned he couldn't think of any reason why anybody would vote against including an inflation factor. Unfortunately, I can. We think of one reason. That is, if you wanted to play a giant game of let's pretend, that is, let's pretend that we can really build this El Cheapo capital, El Cheapo cheap. And the way you do that is you ignore certain realities like inflation. We can't ignore it when we buy groceries. We can't ignore it when we, you know, go down to the friendly pub or anything like that. But when we're planning, I guess we can ignore it at least until the time comes to pay the piper, and it's the intent language and the amendment itself are meaningless. In fact, is there less than meaningless? It's actually hiding something. If we don't say in there that inflation has to be a consideration, because there isn't an expense that the state contemplates that doesn't take that into effect.
Representative Cotton.
That's the point. There is not an expense that the state contemplates that doesn't take inflation into effect or into account. The purpose of the amendment, of course, is again to try to at least in some way show that the cost is going to be more than it really is. I think the amendment's unnecessary and urge defeat.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I didn't intend to say anything on this bill, but Mr. Miller's comments just have to be responded to, I think. I think we've been playing a big game of let's pretend and about half the information we're supposed to have on this issue for years. The Frank Initiative required that all the bondable costs for the next 15 years or something like that be put before the voters. But we've never, ever gotten enough information to know what it costs to keep the capital in Juneau. And that's really the question. Inflation is going to take a factor here, too. We've been pouring the capital in concrete in Juneau for years at exorbitant costs to everybody. And I think this study that we're talking about today can answer once and for all in an honest way whether it costs more to keep the capital in Juneau or whether it costs more to move it. And I, for one, don't know the answer to that question. I doubt anybody else does.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have some of the answers for the good representative from Fairbanks, and they will cut inflation. Not only inflation, more they cut the cost of government. Almost immediately, we'll be saving $17 million in travel for state employees all around the place. We'll be saving approximately $6.3 million in communications to Juneau. We'll be saving approximately $30 million a year in rent and leases, and I don't know how many other millions. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, the last two previous speakers are giving us some fascinating information that has absolutely nothing to do with the amendment before us. The motion is to include the words including inflation after the words submitted. I call for the question.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have the best of all possible memories, but it does seem to me that the Capital Planning Commission included the cost of inflation in their previous studies, and I don't see any reason that they're not going to do it now I wonder if amendments has any real necessity.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, it seems to be that people are saying, well, they're going to do this anyway, so let's not put it in. Maybe secretly saying to themselves or somebody around here saying, well, then maybe they won't put it in and it'll look cheaper, even though that won't be true, then it'll be easier to accomplish that particular viewpoint. Or something. I'm not quite sure. If the argument against the amendment is they're going to do it anyway, then why don't we put it in? We hear this in committee all the time from administrative agencies saying, well, we'll take care of that in regulations. And then usually the legislator chairman or other legislators in the committee respond, well, if we know right now what policy we want, why don't we put it in the statute? Or in the letter of intent, just to make sure you're really going to do it that way. And because that's better legislative policy anyway. So I don't understand any of the arguments against the amendment to the amendment.
Question for the House is the amendment to amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
16 yeas, 23 nays.
The amendment to amendment number one has failed. Amendment number one is before the body. Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make a comment just before we vote. There's been considerable discussion on the floor about this amendment being a rules amendment, a Cotton amendment. Other members of this body have been mentioned as being associated with this amendment. And I'd like to say that I think this amendment reflects the sentiments and the efforts of many members of this body. And I would hope that the constituents who have been urging us to move the Capitol will look at the green lights on the voting board and realize that many others have also been working on this issue.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I think this moment is going to go down in history, in the annals of history, and be forever remembered as the Cotton Amendment. He is a member of the majority party, and I think he should get all the credit he deserves. And I do, again, though, wish to commend him for the manner in which he's pursued this. I think he's done it in a very gentlemanly manner, and I certainly appreciate the grief that he prevented from happening had he decided to take another course of action. I don't agree with what he's doing, but I do commend him, though, from the bottom of my heart for the way he's handled it.
Question for the body is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
24 yeas, 15 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Are there further amendments?
Amendment number two by Brown, Meekins, Anderson, and Moss. Following the allocation, page 21, line 13, following the allocation for handicapped, insert Chairman, House Finance Committee, $3.86 for a bottle of aspirin. Member of Finance Committee from Delta for battery for nerve stimulator, $11.60.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, with the anticipation that there will be other amendments, I move with the permission of my co-sponsors to withdraw the amendment, although I may come up with the aspirin and the batteries myself.
Representative Metcalf.
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House Representative, back to order. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number two by Mr. Metcalf. This one has been duplicated and placed on your desk. It starts page 44 after line 22. Has it been placed on their desk, Mr. McKay?
The clerk, please read the amendment.
Page 44, after line 22, add Capital Site Planning Commission $1 million to be shown as an appropriation item. Appropriation fund source is the general fund. It is the intent of the legislature that the Capital Site Planning Commission utilize the specified funds to undertake the engineering and planning necessary to provide prospective bidders an adequate and comprehensive database for the purpose of preparing and tendering completed bids to the state of Alaska for the construction of facilities deemed appropriate by the legislature or the Capital Site Planning Commission. It is intended that engineering and planning be carried out expeditiously so as to enable prospective bidders to begin their efforts at the earliest possible time.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, as many members of this body know, I've done a tremendous amount of research on this subject. And I've been told by two major corporations capable of developing the development that has been proposed by the state that it lacks sufficient engineering to even go to bid. The $750,000 I voted for, and I think it was a necessary $750,000, but I also think it's lacking. I think it's grossly lacking. I think that there's a reasonable possibility that as a result of the lack that we may be back here next year doing the same thing we're trying to do this year. The Capital Site Planning Commission went out and they painted a nice picture, but they didn't do the job. Well, last time they didn't do the job because they had a membership that didn't want to do the job. This time, if they have a membership that wants to do the job, they may not get there because they don't have adequate funds to finish the job. It requires adequate engineering, adequate specs upon which to base a bid. And that bid has to be adequate for the bond market, and it has to be adequate to complete the job. I am highly skeptical of the probability that $750,000 will do that. After having been told by two major corporations that there is additional engineering needed prior to even being able to complete a bid and prior to even being able to prepare a bid satisfactory, even if it is completed, satisfactory to be placed before the bond market for the purpose of selling bonds. Therefore, I continue. I move the amendment.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment for a couple of reasons. One of them was that everybody has an opinion, and just so happens that I don't agree with Mr. Metcalf's opinion as to the need for this funding. I don't feel that that he's done the necessary or has the necessary backup to show the need for the appropriation. I recommend a no vote.
Is there further debate? Question for the House is amendment number 2. The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Representative Barnes. Are there further members? Clerk may take final roll.
6 yeas, 31 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed. Are there further amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, just very briefly, I've been sitting here for the past 10 minutes or so and watching a joke that we've all been participating in, and when the last amendment came up, it became even more ridiculous. And I have a handful of amendments here, but I don't think I'll participate in that joke. You know, I think what we've done here is a real shame at this point, that we've taken some action on the floor of the House that should not have been taken, that rightfully belong in committee action. And members of the majority party participated in that, and I guess it was their personal decision, but we've actually busted a budget on the floor. I've got some amendments that I was going to propose. I'm not going to, because I'm not going to embarrass those individual members. I think they've been embarrassed enough by the fact that they voted to bust the budget.
Are there further amendments? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Randolph.
Mr. Speaker, there's been a lot of conversation this morning about not busting the budget and the principles involved, the committee system, and all of that. And I just want to be on record as very clearly saying that I think the action of the people of the state of Alaska ought to take place on this floor, and that there's nothing inherently wrong in any way, shape, or form for this, a member or a committee to bring an issue to this body and have it vote on by 21 people, either up or down. And I'm very much frustrated with the conversation I've heard here this morning that we don't have that right. But there's something wrong with doing that. And that's a bit scary, I think. I've been told on this floor many times that the majority party doesn't participate in that type of thing. Everybody comes to the floor their own free will, doing as they see fit. But this conversation this morning has gone beyond that. It seems to be the consensus here that a member and even a committee doesn't have the right to bring an issue before this body and have a vote on. And that's a bit scary. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 556 amended by the House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
If there's no objection, committee substitute for House Bill 556 amended be engrossed, advanced, third reading, placed on final passage. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 556 amended by the Finance Committee. An act appropriating for the operating and capital expenses of the state government and providing for an effective date.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I know our attention's been focused on the amendment and the controversy surrounding it, but just for the record, I would like to give some explanation of this, the rest of this bill, which is $1.2 billion. It's quite a significant number, probably the largest figure that will pass this session, hopefully. Last year's budget, that is the fiscal year 80 operating budget, adjusted for increases that have passed since then, primarily the pay raises, is $1,026,000,000. The capital budget for FY80 was $84 million, for a total last year in last year's bill of $1,110,000,000. This budget has $1,168,000,000 general fund operating and $53 million capital, for a total of $1,221,000,000. The increase in dollars on operating alone is $142 million, or 13.7%, which is a little bit below inflation, but is definitely below, if you consider inflation and population increases, it's a budget that is below last year's in dollar terms. If you discount for inflation and discount for population increase, it's actually a flat budget. The total increase, if you count capital in addition to operating, is $110 million, for a total increase, if you count the total in this bill and last year's adjusted total, of 10%, $110 million, 10% increase, which I think is a pretty decent job in a year when we have $4 billion extra. And I'd like to compare it to the last time that the legislature had surplus revenue, 1969. The percentage increase in the operating budget was 100% when we had the $900 million money from the Prudhoe Bay lease sale. And I think that there's been a lot of concern that large increase in the operating budget, which is a recurring expenditure, was inappropriate. And this year we are going to be appropriating quite a bit of money of that surplus. We're going to be appropriating probably all but $1.5 billion of that $4 million for various things like the tax and the tax reduction and or tax repeal and the distribution and other loan programs and other things. But in terms of how we've dealt with the operating budget, I think given the fact that the normal tendency is for operating budgets to increase drastically when there's available revenue, that we could say that we've held the line a lot more than people would have expected, I think. And I think it's important that in these areas where there are recurring expenses, if you increase the operating budget by $10, you're going to see that $10 every year from now on. And it's very difficult to cut back once you've approved something. So I think it is important. From the governor's submission, the House Finance Committee has reduced 106 positions. That is, the governor had a list of new positions that are not currently filled that he approved. And we approved 106 fewer than he did. So it's a reduction in terms of the number of new employees vis-a-vis the governor's submission. I did not include in these, just for the record, the $500 million of supplemental capital. If you would add that to last year's, which it would technically be added to FY80's capital figure, it would totally skew these figures, and our increase would really show as like a 40% reduction. I don't think that's accurate because we're considering that supplemental, even though it is a supplemental, it's a one-time appropriation. And I don't believe it would be right to manipulate the figures that way in terms of comparing apples to apples, so I didn't put that in. But if you did put it in, it would make these figures look even better from a conservative point of view. So I just wanted to point that out for the record, and I think that perhaps we can even improve upon this in free conference, and I would be hopeful that we could hold the line. Another couple of points to make is that if you compare the dollar figure in the operating to the governor's submission, you'll see that there is an increase, but there are two major reasons for that. One is the governor's figure of $1,152,000,000 as compared to our figure of $1,168,000,000. The governor's figure does not include some budget amendments that we know are coming and that will be traveling down to us, and probably between $5 and $10 million worth of increases. So when those do come down to the free conference committee, the numbers will be much closer. In addition, there is $10,800,000 for one of the few expansions in the budget, which is for an increase in money for alcohol abuse prevention, education, and treatment, and also for a very strong evaluation component. That's $10,800,000 that was added to the governor's budget. There's also $2.5 million added for a new component. This is an expansion, and both of these have been allowed for by other reductions in other areas because these were deemed as higher priorities. So the net is less than, we've increased it $12 million, but the net is is less if you compare the totals. But the 2.5 is for Village Public Safety Officers, which is a new program. We have a pilot now which is working extremely well. And if you apply the normal situation in the urban areas to the rural areas in terms of public safety, it really is inoperative because in the urban areas you'll have a policeman, you'll have a health aide, you'll have someone who is, you'll have doctors, you'll have people, paramedics, alcohol abuse counselors, drug abuse counselors, fire prevention specialists, people that go around training people against accidental death by drowning, and all these kinds of safety procedures. And it would take about 16 or 17 separate individuals in every rural village to recreate that specialization of labor that has that we have in the urban areas. And of course, when you take a village of 125 or 200 or 300 or 400, you simply can't afford to have 16 different people doing 16 different jobs. So the concept with village public safety officers is to return to the old style of the 18th century, 1800s, 19th century, which was that one person would be charged with several different duties, and to train one person from the village rather than an outsider being imposed on them, train one person from the village who's familiar with the culture, speaks the language, and relates to the individuals there in several different activities, from the public safety officer, the normal duties of a police officer, to life-saving activities, paramedical type activities, alcohol counseling, those types of things. And in the pilot program, several lives have been saved that would have otherwise been lost in the villages, and I think it's an excellent program. Those are the two major additions in the budget. That's all I have in terms of explanation. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions.
Is there further debate? Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to stand here a moment. A few years back, we had a $900 million windfall. I think that each and every one of you, as you sit here, realize this is a historic moment for the state of Alaska. I hope that we won't have people speaking to us about the billion-dollar deal that we got into, like we got into on the $900 million. And I think that each and every day, that each and every one of us had better say us prayer to that Lord up yonder, because there's a silver line that passes the state from the top of the state to the bottom of it that's got most of the money that we put into these budgets here. And I hope to God it don't break, because if it does, brother, all of these good things that's been put in here by so many people working so hard are going to be gone. We're hanging by a string, a silver string, and I hope that we all remember that as we vote on this budget. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make some comments that, to some extent, reinforce the statements of the previous speaker. I think that most everyone would agree that the budget before us this morning is a startling document for a number of reasons. The total figure, of course, at least to me, is breathtaking. We had over the first two decades of statehood learned fairly well how to be poor, but quite obviously we have not yet learned how to be rich. The percentage increases over last year and the previous year cause a reaction somewhere between shock and disbelief from my point of view. This document, in company with the capital improvement project budget, will total well over $2 billion. And Mr. Speaker, that boggles the mind. And yet this amount represents barely half the money we'll handle this year. And as the chairman of the Finance Committee indicated, the increases are not related to any significant indices. They're not related to such things as presidential guidelines, inflation factors, or population growth. But in my opinion, they reflect simply a graphic demonstration of Parkinson's second law, which is that expenditures will rise to meet income. Last year, Mr. Speaker, along with about two dozen co-sponsors, I introduced a bill to impose spending limits on the legislature. Because of our rapidly growing income, the formula proposed wouldn't work at this time. But the popularity of the idea last year, the experience of our spending urges this year, and recent polls, which indicate that Alaskans favor a constitutional spending limit of more than 2-1, all demand some sort of restraint being put into law. I'm well aware that there are many legislative priorities still ahead of this issue, and that the session is already longer than many of us would like, Mr. Speaker. I think nonetheless that the frightening fiscal experience that we've been through in the last 108 days and will endure for perhaps another month might have created some perspective. I hope most of us now realize that some sort of spending limit is both necessary and vital. I realize that the budget before us bears no necessary resemblance to what the final version will be, inasmuch as the final version will come out of free conference, and that the final version could likely be higher. And Mr. Speaker, at this point I would like to urge you to charge our free conferees to substantially reduce this budget in free conference. However, to get on with the business of the session, I intend to vote for this bill, but only under protest of its size and with the intention that limits must be imposed, with action in that direction pursued in the very near future.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, just a question for, I suppose, the Chairman of the Finance Committee. Could we get a brief accounting of how many new personnel slots there are, how many new bodies there are in the budget, and roughly where they are?
Representative Meekins.
Well, they're spread out over all the departments. I think there is every department I have on this run does have at least one new position. The only one that is one is the legislature. That's one. And the Department of Military Affairs listed as two. The others are spread out. The total in the governor's submission, as indicated in his budget address, was 650 new positions. And I think subsequent to that announcement, the governor and his staff indicated that although they indeed had submitted a budget with 650 new positions, they were not in support of all of those, even though they had approved them. And we took that to heart, and I think with other ideas in mind, and reduced it, as I mentioned, by 106 employees. So you can subtract those two figures. I can't do it that quickly, and get the total new employees. There, I might add that you'll see some runs that might be confusing. There are approximately 200 positions that have been permanent full-time positions of the state for many years, but have never shown in the runs because they're funded through capital improvement money. And we've forced those to show up here. We haven't changed the funding on all of them, but all of them show, and we've changed the funding on about $8 million worth of those positions. There's about $19 million worth of positions that are funded out of capital improvement money, and we believe that's the House Finance Committee, I think, agrees unanimously that's inappropriate, and have shown all those positions in the run and have actually changed the funding source from CIP money to general fund for $8 million of those, and intend to keep that transition going in the future until we are totally funding those out of general fund. The those positions, however, are not included in that 650 because they're really not new positions. And there are also a lot of new positions that are shown here that are forced upon us, and I disagree with it and hope to repeal the law that forces us to do it. But last year, I think ill-advisedly, we passed a bill which required or prohibited the hiring of temporaries, and temporaries usually didn't show up on our run, and it forced us to hire for temporary type activity permanent part-time or permanent seasonal positions, which now do show in our figures. And that does skew the total somewhat and make it look a lot bigger than it really is. In terms of the total number of man hours or person hours being paid for by with state general fund money, it's not as big an increase as it appears. But those are incorporated because that is the law, and that law has caused us a great deal of trouble in delays because they have to now go through the personnel system, and in extra costs. We've had to supplementally fund a lot of agencies because of increased costs, because they now have to pay benefits that they didn't otherwise have to pay, and other kinds of costs due to delays. And I think there were some really good parts to that bill, and it did solve some problems with temporaries, but it created others that I think it didn't mean to create, and we could either repeal that or change it so that we solve the problems that temporaries created in terms of lack of accountability and other things, but don't impose increased costs on us. But I just mentioned that because that figure is skewed by those numbers. And I would hope that in free conference, as we bargain between the two houses, that the number of new positions would be reduced rather than increased, which is a normal tendency. And I'm certainly going to be working to do that. I would very much like to reduce that number by another 100 or 150. If possible. And of course, it's always difficult to do that, especially when you have a lot of money. But we've managed to reduce some, and I'd like to reduce the others. But that's I think that answers your question. If not, I'll expand on it.
Any further debate? Question for the House is the final passage of House Bill 556. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
28 yeas, 9 nays.
House Bill 556 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of Committee substitute for House Bill number 556 be considered as a roll call for the effective date clause.
If there's no objection, the roll call and final passage will be shown as a roll call in the effective date clause. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I've taken Mr. Hayes' speech to heart. I think I've found an area where we can reduce that budget by $750,000. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 556 amended.
Representative Miller's notice of reconsideration is noted. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I'd like to bring up my reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 644.
The clerk, please read the bill.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 644 by the Judiciary Committee, an act creating the Alaska Statehood Commission and providing for an effective date. We are in third reading, Mr. Speaker, and I have a proposed amendment on my desk.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Could we have a short at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Order. Will clerk please read the amendment number one?
Amendment number one by Mr. Miller. Page 2, lines 3 and 4. Delete, comma, and the possibility of disassociation from the United States.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the body returned to second reading for purposes of the specific amendment just read by the clerk.
There is objection. Representative Miller.
Mr. Clerk, we debated this at some length yesterday, so I think all the members will be familiar with it. I still continue to feel that it's inappropriate and in the worst possible procedure for us to be proposing as a viable alternative the dissolution of the Association of Alaska with the rest of the United States. I continue to think that that's just very bad policy. In a sense, as a person who, for instance, is perhaps not on the same side on the D2 issue as most of the members of this thing, maybe I ought to be for this, because I think back in Congress, people would be outraged to think that we're talking seriously about pulling out. So maybe for that reason, maybe I should be encouraging this particular clause in the language, but instead I can't. I just feel it's in the worst possible taste, and it's the worst possible policy for us to be talking as a viable alternative of saying, "Too bad, U.S. of A. You were a pretty good country while you lasted, but we're going to pull out now, particularly now that we've got ours."
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, I, I voted for the Judiciary Committee substitute, but in talking with members, well, I guess I'm not supposed to talk about the other body, but sometimes when a bill reaches a committee, sometimes it goes into one file and sometimes it goes into a circular file. And I'd really like to see this bill pass, and I'm concerned that without this amendment proposed by Mr. Miller, we may never see the final passage of the legislation. And as I said on the floor yesterday, I believe that the commission under subsection 6 can consider anything it wants to relating to Alaska's relationship with the United States, that the inclusion of the language that's proposed to be deleted is not essential for the bill, and frankly, I'd rather see the bill pass than pass both houses than pass only one.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For those individuals or group that don't like participating with the United States, they're always free to leave. You don't need a committee to study it.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, we got to adjourn first. I don't want to leave the business here undone. I'd, kind of like to leave by May 15th. After giving this very serious consideration there, I was thumped on by one of the most powerful members of the House of Representatives who sits in this body, who happens to sit right in front of where I'm speaking. He thumped on me very effectively and hard, places where I really hurt and everything else. And I've reconsidered my position, and I will concur with the motion to return a second reading to remove that language. I believe it could be construed as being extremely inflammatory, and even if there are people who are of the mind that we ought to, in strict and open language, consider the possibility of disassociation, I believe it probably would do more harm than good. And I have paused and reflected on it and would hope that we would go back to second reading to remove that language.
Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment, and I'm going to vote against it. I think the way the bill is written here, calling for the possibility of dissociation from the United States, is very appropriate, in very good taste, and very, very American. As we did yesterday, I'd like to remind the body that this country was born in violence. We rebelled against the British. Our forefathers took their guns and they shot the British. And that's how you and I are sitting here in freedom today debating this issue. And for us not always to keep that in mind, that we're going to rebel against tyrants, is saying that we're going to submit to tyrants. And if Washington is tyrannical, I would hope that the sovereign states would rebel against a federal government. And I would hope that Americans all over would take up arms against a federal government that was tyrannical. I think that's American. That's what it's all about. That's why we're here today. I think including this in this bill is very appropriate. And I hope it stays there.
Representative Eliason.
Speaker, I am certainly in favor of the amendment. However, I do not support the bill, so I suspect if I vote against the amendment and the bill passes, the bill will be killed on the other end, which is great, fine for me.
Representative Brown.
I think we ought to give, considering the way he's being beaten on, I think we should give the majority leader the Thumpy of the Day award.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, to follow up some of the remarks that Mr. Byrne just made, I have a very difficult time comprehending a situation where the Secretary of Interior would impose the Antiquities Act on all of Alaska and us sitting here meekly taking it. There are times at which the federal government could and some people think already have, stepped out of line to the extent that, that we ought to seriously consider our relationship with the federal government. I just totally agree with Dr. Byrne that, that is certainly the big thing that makes us different from all the other countries that we're so proud to be different from. And if we lose sight of that, there won't be any place to move to, as Mr. Martin suggested. I just find it really hard to, I guess the question I'd have to ask people who, Representative Miller, I guess particularly, what indignities is he willing to suffer? Is there no bounds to which he would allow the federal government to go without saying that's enough?
Representative Anderson.
May we have a brief
House Please Stand at Ease. The House please come back to order. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 644 be held in third reading with the motion to move back to second reading till tomorrow's calendar.
There's objection. The choice is that one member has indicated he will call the House to make sure all the members are here. So the alternative is proposed that we hold the bill over till tomorrow rather than call the House and wait here until everybody arrives. Is there debate on the motion? Is there objection to the motion to hold the bill over with the pending motions in third reading till tomorrow's calendar? There is objection. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
31 yeas, 3 nays.
Motion is carried. The bill will be held over until tomorrow's calendar with the pending motions. Brings us to the citations on the calendar. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, if there's no objection, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be adopted.
If there's no objection, the citations will be adopted. Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker. Somehow or another, you're starting to look like me. You're getting gray.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be included as one of the sponsors on the citation in memoriam of Dr. A.S. Wally Walkowski.
There's no objection. Representative Hayes will be added as a sponsor. Representative Byrne?
I also would like to be added as a sponsor.
Representative Byrne, Representative Montgomery, any further members? Completes today's calendar. Brings us to unfinished business. Are there any items
unfinished business before the House? Representative Martin.